supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Mayday, mayday. Let's put out a distress call to Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, what's the significance of Mayday?
Today, the first day of May is recognized by some cultures as a way to celebrate the coming of spring. In older times, it was considered to be the first day of summer in some European countries.
First day of summer?
Yes, so first day of summer.
Did they line all the seasons up accordingly?
Not quite. February 1st was seen as the first day of spring, June 21st as midsummer. And if we actually look at Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, that occurs on June 21st. So that would help us understand how midsummer fits into this, with the understanding that spring starts much earlier in those countries. Now, you'll recognize that these are all cultural celebrations and have nothing to do with the position of the Earth around the sun.
Interesting, then, that Cinco de Mayo is also a date of astronomical significance.
Well, yes, but that Cinco de Mayo is not necessarily the same celebration as the one that we would have coming up this Friday. This would be the 56th anniversary of Alan Shepard's flight into space as the first American astronaut. Now, before we misunderstand, this was not an orbital mission. It was a suborbital mission, a ballistic mission, if you will, in which he flew up into space, 62 miles or so up, and then came back down in a 15-minute flight.
What's old is new again. Isn't that the kind of trip that's going to first be offered to regular citizens who want to experience that kind of a thing?
Well, yes, that's true, but their flights will last a little bit longer than that 15 minutes. And, of course, they won't have anywhere near the kinds of tasks and chores or anxiety or concerns that were had back at that time when this first flight was done. However, the significance of this was dimmed to a degree because of the fact that Yuri Gagarin had actually flown one orbit around the Earth as the first human from the Soviet Union just 3 weeks earlier. So at this point, America was behind the eight ball in terms of the space race.
From this vantage point, why is it then that John Glenn's name has more renown than either Shepard or Gagarin?
The reason why Glenn is so universally recognized is because he was the first American to orbit the Earth. He did three orbits. And what that did was that really brought America fully into the space race as a real contender. John Glenn also had the personality and the presence that was being looked for at that time as that image of what an American astronaut should be.
By contrast, Neil Armstrong had the presence, but not that personality.
By the time Armstrong came along, he'd had much more training than the original seven astronauts had, and also had a better sort of view of what his missions would be. But he didn't have the kind of relationship with the media that Glenn and the original seven astronauts had. It wasn't that he didn't like the press, but that he was just a much more private person and felt like his accomplishments should speak for him more than him speaking himself.
And they sure did.
And they certainly did. In fact, it was 51 years ago this Saturday that Neil Armstrong ejected safely from what was then called the Flying Bedstead. And this was the Lunar Landing Research Vehicle. It was a training platform, really, for him to learn how to fly what was going to become the Lunar Lander. But this was a large, ungainly piece of steel contraption that had two jet engines on it that he was trying to maneuver into a landing position. Let's say the craft got away from him, and he successfully ejected from it while he was training for his upcoming lunar landing mission.
I'm going to check and see if bedstead sales plummeted after that.
They certainly should have.
Let's note with a certain sense of sadness that Cassini is starting its final orbits of Saturn.
Yes, indeed it does. Last week, the Cassini mission flew its last orbit around the largest moon of Saturn, Titan. And so as a result of that, we've collected a tremendous amount of information about that moon itself, understanding its hydrocarbon lakes and its atmosphere, and really getting a look at an unusual moon, one of the first of this kind that we'd ever seen, and certainly was unexpected. But this is the beginning of the demise for Cassini altogether, because now it's going to spiral around Saturn one orbit per week, and by the end of the summer, by September, it will begin its plunge into Saturn itself. Interestingly enough, these next 22 orbits are going to bring the spacecraft between the innermost ring of Saturn, the D ring, and the planet itself. So for 22 orbits, it's going to have some of its closest approaches to Saturn as it spirals its way into its own demise.
Derek, before we bid adieu, what are some of your takeaways from the recently completed March for Science, and what does it portend going forward?
The March for Science was a really wonderful event attended by 10,000 plus people here in the Philadelphia region. And
rain was a little deterrent.
Rain was a little deterrent to the march. And it really demonstrated the degree to which people are committed to the positive use of science, the positive understanding of science, and for the proper understanding of science for its use to help inform making policy about the quality of our life in so many different aspects. So now that the march and the rallies are done all across the country and all across the world, and of course, as scientists, we need to engage other people around science. One of the things that you can do is you can seek out authentic science experiences at a science center someplace. If you're a practicing science, now we clearly understand that simply presenting more facts over and over and over again doesn't convince people that they should believe the science that you're trying to get them to understand. What we find more often than not is that people will go with the belief that their immediate cohort has about a topic. So they're influenced by their affinity group that they're connected to. So it doesn't do any good to try to fight or push or press or present more facts, but to understand why people believe something about a particular topic and then give them the opportunity to look at something on their own and come to their own conclusion about it. That's far more successful and productive than anything else. The other thing that we need to recognize is that if funding for science research is important to you, you need to tell your congressperson that, and you need to get as many people around you to tell our Congress representatives that also, because that's where the rubber hits the road. If there's an understanding that, you know, your position could be in jeopardy at the next election because you don't support what we think is important to us, then that really gets a person's attention.
That level of accountability.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.